There you go.
We're all alive and active.
No, I don't know about active, but we're here.
It might even question live, but...
Yeah, we're at the end of the minute. The planning board meeting, Town of Monroe, March 8th special meeting, come to order. First item is, we want to take a moment to review the minutes of the February meeting.
This is Anne, I have just one correction. On page 23, 44, 7 lines up from the bottom, I think the word renovation should be innovation. Section 1 of the law encourages innovation in residential development. This was in connection with discussion of the solar pipe.
Anything further? From anyone? If not, I have a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes from the meeting.
To accept the minutes with one minor correction for the February meeting. To the motion, we have a second.
This is Ann, I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion?
Did we have two February meetings or just one? One February meeting, correct?
One.
Okay.
We have two in March.
Two in the March. Okay.
All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carried. Now, as usual, as I did last month, we're off on the agenda.
That was fair.
Who's the first one up?
SRH TJM for the subdivision, formerly known as Arrowhead.
Arrowhead. Why do I keep losing this thing? Do we have...
Hey, this is Travis. Can you hear me?
Yep, Travis, we have you there, and I've already made you a call host.
So, all right, I'm going to share my screen then, if that's okay.
Yep, if you want to share your screen, please do.
Good, I presume you can see that?
Yep, I can see it just fine. There's nobody else from there's nobody else from your team or your applicant that I need to have on, correct, this view?
Allow no, me. Not for this one. Joe Danville, I think.
Yeah, I see him in there from later on.
Later on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
No, Rich is not with us tonight.
Okay.
Mayor Beth Swetland, I believe, is on the line.
I'll unmute her here.
You can find her.
Yep.
All right, good evening, everyone. Travis Mitchell with the Environmental Design Partnership, representing the applicants, SRH, TJM, LLC, and Richard Skirmerhorn in the subdivision lands of SRH, TJM. I'm going to flip through some of these slides pretty quickly, as you've seen many of them before with this application and the adjoining project location shown here. Route 9 to the west. The project site is a 23.5-acre site highlighted by the red boundary right along the property there. On the town zoning map, we're located split between the R1 and R2 zones. Close up of the zoning map, roughly the property outlined as shown, again, split between R1 and R2. The subdivision layout remains the same as you saw when we last presented, I think, toward the end of December. We got it overlaid on Google Earth, as we've done with this several times before. It does remain exactly as we had shown you previously, except that we've included the mail kiosk, which I did mention when we presented the neighboring project. And we added a language that was requested about the ability to do something of a future path. path on the HOA lands. We, as I mentioned last time, there was a collective traffic study done for this project and the neighboring two projects. Green and Peterson, on behalf of the town, reviewed that study and provided their concurrence with the findings and that there will be no significant impact of the projects. You've also seen this previously. This is our cross easement for access and utility mapping, showing how each of the two neighboring projects can be constructed independently of each other, and obviously eventually with a joint road network. My approval process slide, as I mentioned, was asked before the board in late December here again tonight to review the preliminary plat. We did submit detailed plans in December and again in February. I don't think this one got referred to the county. Jim can correct me if I'm wrong, but we needed to, if not, we need to get a county referral going and also make a start a seeker action. Again, as with the neighboring property, I'd expect this to be an unlisted action. We could complete a full long form and would ask that you initiate coordinated review tonight. As I mentioned, with a sign-off from the town's traffic engineer last month, LaBerge was also asked to review the combined stormwater from the two neighboring projects. They provided their sign-off last month. We received some initial comments from the highway department, which are nothing significant in there, and yet to receive comments from Jesse Fish on Older, but I wouldn't expect there'll be anything significant there. It's a pretty basic system. That's all I have. I'd ask if the board's ready that we consider a public hearing for your normal April meeting. I think that would give us enough time for the seeker coordinator review to come back and also the county referral.
Well, I think, Travis, we yep. actually we started the seeker action on this in January. So
you could have. That's my apology that you did. I could remember that you had.
Yeah, we started that as well beyond the 30 days. We got one comment letter back from DEC, and they concurred with the planning board acting as lead agent. I have to check on the county referral. I'll check on that tomorrow. I think it was done, but I'm not certain. And the public hearing for this is already set. It's set for next Monday. That was also done.
You're mixing up projects, Jim. The public hearing for next Monday is the Arrowhead.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right, yeah, then this is the other, okay. Then, yeah, you're okay. Then, yeah, we do have to do the seeker referral. We have to start from ground zero on this one.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought so, okay.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
So, county referral, seeker, and set the public hearing.
Yep. Yeah, I think we've got all the review portions back, and I think because of the stagger in the meetings that we do have enough time to complete the 30-day coordinated review and the county referral if the board were inclined to set the public hearing.
Okay. Yep. That's
hey, Travis, this is Ann. We work at a relative to the open space. What kind of provision are you proposing to put in place to ensure that open space is maintained and preserved as such?
Yeah, so it would be part of the homeowners association documents. It would be owned by the homeowners association.
Will there be a clause in that deed that no further development is permissible?
Sure, I would expect so. Yep.
Would we be making
note
of that on the subdivision plan?
Yes.
That's fine. we can do that.
So the homeowners association will be responsible for not only owning it, but preserving, managing, maintaining that property. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the more important thing, Ann, is that there can be no further development. And that should be on both the SRH side of the deed and the Arrowhead Meadows side.
Does some of this open space include stormwater management
pumps? Yes, so we wrote that the town requires the homeowner association to want to maintain the stormwater management basin, so yes, they are within the homeowner association lands.
So that's part of the open air, open space calculation.
Yeah, I can double check it, but I have to double check to be sure. And
yeah, I'm only asking because I think one of the primary purposes of a cluster development is to ensure that there is open space, and I would think if you add to a stormwater management anyway, that really wouldn't be open space.
So it's just showing that there's room to put it in there.
That's right.
Okay, and the
last question is, as I've been bugging you with this project about access to the park, we're going to actually be able to finalize that discussion with the project just south of this evening. On the previous development or subdivision plan that we talked about last meeting, there was an access way from Road A over to the HOA to get to that. I don't see it on the map I'm looking at now. Is that on the previous map, but it hasn't shown up on this?
Yeah, so again, we'll be carrying over. So this map represents just this portion, and the lines that you see on the neighboring pestle are just an older rendition of it. So, yes, we actually have
some. So they show you.
It doesn't show either.
It's okay,
but
it's on there.
Yeah, it's there.
That's
no, it's there for sure. Yep.
So, I was just checking to make sure, because there's one thing that showed up on this one, is there's some type of an access drive to the stormwater retention pond.
Yep.
But it's listed as being an access road for that. I want to make sure that wasn't now our access to the HOA to get to the park. Okay.
No, we just as you would ask
that,
time,
stormwater management.
The park.
Right, because this stormwater management will be fenced, right?
You know, it can be if needed. It's something that I'm going to work on with Paul Joseph. He has that same question. We have as good a soil as we get here. There's no sign of groundwater, and we're not required to fence them, and we prefer not to, but it's certainly, if Paul wants them fenced, we'll fence them. Yeah.
You don't expect there to ever be water, you know, a foot or two deep in it, then?
I do not, and you know what I suggest is that we can set up a provision in the homeowners association language so that if in the event, you know, we're found to be wrong down the road, that they get to fence them. But I prefer not to have the fencing there, and I think the neighborhood would as well if it's not required.
Okay. All right. That's all I have at the moment. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Hey, Travis, Mike Faber.
Oh, wait, I did have
one. Travis, how are you? Looking at your site detail, you got the water services. You're running 2-inch copper water services, or is it just a standard drawing there and there? I don't want to step on Jesse's toes.
Yeah, it won't be 2-inch copper. It'll be you know, 3/4 inch. I'll take a look at that. There won't be 2-inch copper.
Yeah, 3/4 on the short side, 1 inch on the long side. I think that's what it is. Yeah, I didn't know if you noticed there or not, but I saw it there. And then again, of course, you know how I feel about the sewer. I think that the sewer should go in. So just want to make a note of that for the record. Okay.
Understood. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Travis, this is Ann Purdue again. I concur with Mike's view that using the sewer system would be preferable. And I mentioned the issue is cost. Are you talking about the real property tax or the usage fee or both?
No, well, it's really what I guess would be the real property tax, the ad valorem tax that pays for the debt service over the next 30 years. From what I've seen so far, and at some point in that, we'll get some updated numbers, but from what I've seen so far, it's not something that's affordable for a single family home.
And so this property is not currently within the sewer district, which is subject to this tax.
That's correct.
Okay.
Travis, could I ask you a question on this? You've got a whole lot of experience with this, how does the health department look at that when there's a sewer main going by the property? Don't they usually prefer the property to be hooked up to it?
I mean, we'd all prefer it to be hooked up to it.
Right.
But there is no regulation that I'm aware of that requires it.
Mike, it's my understanding that that's a matter of local law, and it's one that we just don't have yet. Some communities do have that, where if you're within a certain district of either a water or sewer district,
mm-hmm.
you have to hook on. But we don't have that here yet.
Okay. Thank you.
And Travis, just a quick question, something I missed on my notes here. This being a housing development, it's just going to have a street sign up front, right? You're not planning on signs called there, Arrowhead Meadows, or?
Yeah, that's a very good question, John. I've actually worked with the Michaels Group. they have developed a similar sign that will be pushing to you in the next set of drawings to what is down the road at the Winter project.
Okay, because I hadn't seen any sign locations or anything for the deal.
Yep. No, it's not in the package that you have right now, but it will be part of the next submit for your review.
Okay.
Travis, one more thing. As I see, you got PVC pipe in here. We're not using ductile. Again, that's a Jesse call, I understand, but.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's up to Jesse. We prefer to use PVC, and I think he had allowed it
okay.
previously, but ultimately, it'll be Jesse's call if he wants ductile. We use
correct. Ductile. Yeah, just to run it by him, I didn't know. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. Thanks.
And Travis, this is Dan. What would you say the break point is in terms of affordable cost of participating in public schools?
Yeah, that's a good question, yeah. And the challenge that we have right now, I've been told, we've often been told on occasions that the cost as it was laid out in 2017, which was somewhere between $2,500 and $3,000 is what it worked out to be for an average single-family home, and that's in this type of subdivision. So that's somewhere $2,500 to $3,000 a year for 30 years, which that is not—it's not even close to affordable. So, and we think what is affordable? In the New York State Comptroller set the threshold of affordability above which it requires their review and approval for this type of project. And the last I knew, that number was somewhere around $607,000 a year. So, pretty much the state sets a threshold on what they determine, what they consider affordable. And I would look for somewhere in that neighborhood as a starting point.
Travis, are the cost much of a difference between putting in the infrastructure for a sewer system comparison with putting in septic systems? Are the costs pretty close? Or is it less?
It's a good question, Mike. So typically, a sewer system in this type of soil, it is going to cost more than a septic system, no matter what. If it's a septic system here, you have the best soil that you can have for a septic. But it will just be infrastructure cost itself.
Correct.
And then, the benefit of the sewer outweighs it. The challenge here is that we're paying, potentially not only the infrastructure within this project, but the infrastructure to get the sewer, all the way to exit 17 under 9, and it supporting that additional infrastructure, which is necessary to get the sewer there, it's just not, it isn't something that's affordable for a single family home. The commercial properties are along Route 9 are a different story because, in that area, you really need the sewer in order to reach that maximum development potential. Here, a septic system has, available through all Monroe, through the residential development that's happened there so far, a septic system can work, can and does work effectively and efficiently. So that's really the issue that we've got.
Okay. Thank you.
Board, any further questions?
Well, I got one more. We heard anything from our schools or anything? Somebody put out a note, didn't we, to notify our schools that we heard? Because we've got quite a cluster of homes
right.
coming in.
I notified them for the first one that's coming up next week in regards to Seeker, and I did not hear anything back.
I think somewhere somebody, this happens every time we adopt something. We don't hear back from them. I think, do we have a liaison from our town to the school? And somebody, we need to have something on the record that says the school is either okay with this or not okay with this.
I can check with them.
Because they're in a position right now, and I don't mean to get off the beat here, but they're in a position right now where we may be bringing another school to our district, and we should make sure that they know that there's 140 homes at least coming into our town before we get too far ahead of the game. I would like to hear a definite answer, either yay or nay, from them.
That's one of the reasons why we included the school district in our notification procedure. Historically, they have ignored it.
Yeah, and that's okay historically, but to move forward, we need an answer.
I will call tomorrow directly.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I think it's important.
I mean, your point's well taken. It's kind of extenuating the circumstances here when we have, you know, three subdivisions, four subdivisions coming in this proximity, in this volume.
Right, right.
It's kind of exceptional, so I'll reach out tomorrow. I'll call the district superintendent.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Jim.
And I'll try and get word before the first public hearing next week on the Arrowhead side.
Yeah, I just think it's good business. So.
Or you can try it. You should be. Well, again, Travis, you managed to confuse me, which is not difficult, by doing two at once. I'm not sure. Haven't we declared Seeker for Arrowhead?
We have for Arrowhead, but not for this one. He is requesting that we do it for this one. And we that's why I got confused. We have a public hearing set for Arrowhead next week. We do not for this one.
And I just wrote down that this was Arrowhead.
Really got to name this pretty soon here, Travis. This SRH thing is not working.
Into your crystal ball, which is what the dual source seeker is concerned with this project. Nothing's in the day. We made a determination. Type one. Type two.
Peter, this is Ann. Now, don't we have to wait for the county to get back to us or let their time lapse before we make a determination?
No.
No, the county's not involved in that decision.
So that, and we're not actually making a determination on the seat. You're just declaring yourself lead agency and initiating a coordinated review.
Okay, yep. I understand. Sorry, I misunderstood, Peter.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
So you're looking for a motion for us to declare lead agency and list this as an unlisted action?
Whatever. Just that's what we're looking for.
All right, so I make a motion that we declare lead agency on this and then we list this as an unlisted action.
So
John Mark making a motion.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to clarify, Mr. Chairman, for the coordinated review, we will be reaching out to DEC, DOH, DOT, the Attorney General's Office, the County Planning and DPW, and the School District.
Okay. You got them all. Motion has been made to declare SRHTJN subdivision as an unlisted action and for the Planning Board of the Town of the Road to assume the role of lead agency for that environmental review. To the motion, do I have a second?
This is Meredith, and I second. Oh, Meredith, you go ahead.
Come quiet. Motion has been made and seconded to declare SRHTJM as an unlisted action and for the Planning Board of Town of the Road to assume the role of lead agency. Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, this one is not really too controversial. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. We got there. Is there anything else you'd like to consider or do? Do you think you have enough information to go to the public hearing?
19th
at 7:05.
And we already have one slot filled with the PUD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Motion. Motion has been made to schedule a public hearing for SR18J and subdivision for April 19th. To the motion, do I have a second?
Just Meredith, I'll make a second.
Motion has been made and seconded to schedule a public hearing for SRHTJ and subdivision for April 19th. Further discussion?
We need to list the time. 7:05.
Since there's no further discussion, this is not too controversial. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay, and Travis, I will just remind you that you have to put up the public hearing sign 10 days prior on the property.
That's right.
So don't forget that by April 9th.
Will do.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell, turn it off fair play. Do you have any further questions of us?
No. Thank you all for your time. We'll see you next week.
Good night, Travis.
Thank you. Next item I have on the agenda for this evening is Sarone for Jacoby Park North. We have it alone.
You said April 19th for the public hearing.
Hold on, you know, I'm getting caught up with you here. What's the next one, Mr. Chairman?
Jacoby Park North.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Jim, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Hey, not bad.
Hold on here, I'm getting caught up with you here. Just hold on a second.
Okay.
I'm going to make you a co-host, because you have a screen you want to share?
Yes, I do.
All right. Yeah, I'm making you a co-host to do it that way.
Okay.
So you should be getting that capability anytime now.
Lots. and some additional land. Just so everyone's clear, we've taken away, and we're not combining any land from the north or the south. We're strictly only dealing with the lands on the north north side of Rec Road. So the slide is north. What we are looking at is highlighted in yellow, that is the Jacoby Farm North. The land immediately north of that up in here is the Arrowhead and SHR TJM subdivision that we were just speaking about. Rec Road here, Gansmore Road, Bluebird Road in that location. We are a 12.74 acre parcel. We are located in the R2 zone, which permits single-family residential as a use. As we work through the density computations, which have been provided to the town with the concept, we are permitted a density of 23 lots on the north side of the property. Again, here's just a existing conditions. We're dealing with existing farm fields, abandoned pasture fields. I think everybody in the town has gone to the park at least once and has a general idea and understanding of the existing conditions on that property. Again, vacant pasture land, primary access road to the Heron Beachard Park. And just so everyone's aware, there is additional land on the south side of the road, a separate tax parcel. That is known as Jacoby Farm South, and we will be coming in with applications for that in the upcoming months. So here's the general overview of the layout. Again, we have 23 lots. We've created a plan very similar to what was reviewed during the concept. We're providing three new town roads, Road A, B, and C, that provides access to all 23 of the single-family lots. No individual driveway will be connected to Lennox Boulevard or Rec Road. About 1,500 linear feet of new town road. Our proposed building setbacks as part of the cluster are a 10-foot rear, 25-foot front yard, and a 7.5-foot side yard. Stormwater will be managed on site in a series of infiltration basins and underground stormwater practices. Water will be connected to the municipal water supply for the town of Rhodes. Sanitary provisions, individual septic systems on individual lots. As we're looking at the plan, you see the roads. This is the house, typical house driveway, and then in the rear of every yard is a septic system outlined, identifying that we have plenty of room to do that. This heavy line here is the limits of the open space. Different than the previous applications, we are proposing to have deed-restricted, privately owned open space. So there will not be any HOA lands associated with this application. Stormwater is being managed in these areas here and here. We are working with the town on stormwater management and how we're going to handle it over on Road C. Had a meeting with the highway department, Jim Martin, and there are some minor changes in the plans that we are looking to move forward and finalize that water in accordance. But again, I think that was a very productive meeting. One of the things that came out of that meeting is we were proposing Road A and Road B to be one-way streets that are 16 feet wide. As a result of that meeting, those streets will be widened to 22 feet in the full access travel in both directions. We're proposing street trees along the side of the road to create a streetscape consistent with the park-like setting to which this project leads to. This is the overall grading utility plan showing stormwater management systems, septic systems, the lots, the grading associated with it, and everything of that nature. Ultimately, this project will be reviewed by the town's reviewing engineer. I don't recall seeing a letter from them, so I'm not sure that they have reviewed it yet. Certainly, we think that is going to be appropriate here in the upcoming months to get reviewed by the town engineer. just for an overall view, this is Jacoby Farms North, the intended layout for Jacoby Farms South. You see that all the roadways align with each other. We're not putting any private driveways out onto the main road, and we're providing access to the potential future development in the south if it is to ever come forward. We have reviewed a letter provided by Greenman Peterson. A couple of the items in there, while the overall combined traffic study shows that this project, combined with the other projects in the area, will not have any significant or degradation of the level of service within the area. They were concerned with the amount of curb cuts we were proposing on Rec Road. That is somewhat contrary to what we heard in our previous meeting. The planning board in our December meeting looked very favorable upon this layout in comparison to some other alternatives. So that is an element we'll have to get worked out with this board, with Greenman Peterson, the highway superintendent certainly preferred this alternative, not having a bunch of driveways coming out onto Lennox Road. With that, I'm certainly try and answer any of the questions the board may have. We are looking to initiate the coordinated review of this project if that's what this board deems appropriate. We believe we are in unlisted action. We would like to do that, and we'd like to get set up for a public hearing as soon as possible to continue review on this project. Thank you.
The one question I have, Joe, from an administrative point of view, is I'm not sure that we ever received an allocation for escrow for the payment of the stormwater review.
Okay, I guess give us what that would be.
It's a $2,500 amount, and as soon as we receive the money, we set up the account, and then we send the stormwater plan off to review to the engineer.
Okay, we will make sure that gets to the town as soon as possible.
Thanks, and then we'll start the review right away.
Now, you've declared this, I think this is an R2 zone, and I kind of agree with you. So you're coming in as a cluster development?
Correct.
Have you done your due diligence in your arithmetic to demonstrate that the number of lots would fall in with acceptable in that scenario?
Yes, the site statistics on the cover sheet of the drawings have the density computations. And show that we have an allowed density of 23 single-family lots on 12.74 acres.
Oops, I just like to disregard those pages, I guess. Board, any further questions?
How did we make out with a water line? Are we going to have a dead-end water line on this street? Mike Shaver, for record.
There is a meeting scheduled next week to address the water connection into the park.
Okay.
So that we can have a continuous loop.
Okay. And then also on your site details, you also have a 2-inch copper water service that you're going to be running into all these houses. You want to correct that?
Again, similar to the previous project, that is going to be either a 3/4 inch or 1 inch.
Okay, so that'll be corrected. Okay. And then, is there any thought about putting sewer in here, municipal sewer?
Well, right now, this property is a good 2,000-3,000 feet away from any sewer lines. Certainly, if it was extended to the doorstep and the sewer was at an appropriate feet, it would be something we would consider. However, being so far away from our property, the only possible option we have is septic systems.
At this time, but if it was brought closer to you, you would consider it, correct?
If it's brought closer to us and the fees for the, we'll say the taxes are brought down into an appropriate level, we would consider it. Certainly the other item is the timing associated with that. This subdivision can certainly be under construction this fall, making sure that we have the availability of sewer that coincides with the timing of construction would be very critical as well.
Okay. All right, yeah, that's fair enough. I just think, again, you know, we're putting in a lot of homes, and I'm big on the sewer thing. I think it should be all hooked up to the sewer. So if it's available, we can talk about it as we go along. But thank you for your time.
Board, any further questions?
This is Andrew. Relative to the storm management areas, who's responsible for those?
The stormwater management areas will be maintained by the homeowners association.
Did they just say it was?
And how much acreage here is going to be restricted to no further development?
We are dedicating a small area of land to the town for an entrance to the park. That is located here. I don't have the exact number, but all the land that's outside of the lots in this dash area is all going to be deed restricted. I can certainly provide the exact number in the following meeting.
Yeah, Joe, could you do that calculation and provide it?
Certainly.
Joe, I have one other question. What are you going to do with that compost pile that's there?
It's going to make some beautiful topsoil for all.
Are you just going to spread it out, or?
We're going to have to probably relocate some of it off site. It's not going to be suitable for fill underneath the roads, underneath the houses,
right,
underneath
the right.
Systems. Use as much as we can on site. Some of it's going to have to be trucked off.
Are there any concerns? I think we need to get a hold of fire on this, because that thing is probably hotter than hot inside. Once we start taking it apart, maybe we should notify fire before we do that.
If that is what the town wants, we can certainly do that. Right. I don't necessarily. That pile's been there for quite a few years. I'm sure it's fairly decomposed at this point in time. If there was a fire hazard, it probably already has passed that point. But if it is a safety concern or there is an issue, certainly the fire department will be contacted.
Can we?
You think it is, or you know that it is?
Joe, can I talk? This is Johnny Smoke.
Yes, Johnny, go ahead.
Gentlemen, Freddie, my estimator was over there when we were digging keyholes and work test and engineering. He actually broke up the pile a little bit, and there was no heat or anything coming out of the pile. We just wanted to separate and see what we had. Some is topsoil, some is natural waste, like you said, leaves, debris, wood chips that would be going on the site. So there is no concern of that.
How far did he go into it, do you know?
All the way. He pretty much went down and he almost down to the ground level. We tried to see what was topsoil and what was had to be more on the site. To try to start separating it, is that something you want to start getting in the process to get ready before construction?
All right, I'm just a little concerned it might be hot in the middle come summertime, that's all. Just a concern.
The further you get into that pile, the further you're going to get away from oxygen, which is going to lower the heat anyway, so it shouldn't be a huge issue on the interior temps. This is John Arnold. I have a couple of questions. You mentioned something about negotiating with the town, something about a park access. Was that in the northeast corner?
I don't know that we are talking about any park access. The meeting we're having in a couple weeks is dealing with water line extensions, road improvements, tree trees, street lighting, things of that nature.
Okay, the reason I bring this up is this was originally brought to us with an HOA. There were lands in the back edge behind all the lots that were considered part of an HOA. You've changed that now and made it deed restricted for development in the back, which handles the idea of maintaining some semblance of open space, but it's not exactly open space, right? I mean, this isn't public or even for the people of the development to use. It's people own this and their homeowners are covering their acreage all the way to the boundaries, correct?
That is correct. It's deed restricted and that it will never be cleared of trees or further cleared of trees. But it is privately open, privately owned, deed restricted open space.
But there is some of this that's homeowner association, correct or not?
There is no homeowner association land proposed.
So we have a cluster development with no no actual open space provided.
There's no HOA open space. There certainly is open space.
Okay, so I must be missing the point. So when you're saying open space, you're just saying that there's nothing to be developed in there. You're not saying that it's accessible open space. It's just undeveloped areas.
It is undeveloped open space, correct.
Okay, all right. I'm just trying to hash this out, figure this out. I've been trying with your development and with the one next door to gain an access for walking from these developments to try and keep kids from being out on Route 32 or Bluebird Road in order to get to the park entrance. Okay, the development in Riverview has no direct access to the park. It has no direct entrance to the park boundaries. Okay, so when you presented this earlier, there was an HOA, and I suggested that that would be nice to have access across the corner of what's now Lot 17. To provide access for not only this development, but also for that other development to get to the park. At this point, it looks like there's no way to do that now, because I don't imagine that Lot 17 wants to take on the responsibility in their homeowner's pocket to cover that liability in their home. Is that a pretty good presumption on my part?
So, I guess I just want to reflect a little differently. In December, and I'm looking at the plans from December right now, I can bring them up on the screen. Does that show up on your screens?
Yep.
In December, when we presented it, this was presented as privately owned, deed-restricted open space. There was never any HOA lands proposed at the development or as part of the development in December. We remain consistent with that currently.
The print you bring up about shows, like in Lot 17, shows the line stopping right there.
So if you let's zoom in on it a little bit, it's here is the lot line for Lot 21. This line here is nearly identical to what we're showing today over here. That is the limits of the deed-restricted open space. We've always proposed this to be privately owned land. It was never proposed to be HOA lands.
All right, because I'm a big proponent of what John brought up. We've been pushing hard with you guys on the upper one to provide access through there from this one to get into the park. A small revision of Lot 17 that could be possible across that corner.
So one of our biggest concerns about providing trail access through that area is we're now introducing at least 84 residential lots access through the rear yard of Lot 17 and Lot 16. One of the biggest complaints, not only from this builder, but all the builders I've worked with in the area and the region, is having people walking through essentially your backyard creates a security risk when your children are out in their backyard playing and doing what kids do in the backyard. If we start introducing and bringing a bunch of 84 homes, that could be 160, 320 people that come through that trail system at any time. So it is a security risk, and we're not comfortable providing trail access immediately behind our lots, and it would significantly devalue those lots.
Okay, so just if you don't mind me interrupting for just a minute, a solution to 17, lot 17 homeowner, and I have to cover the liability of that, would be maybe that a portion of that land wide enough for a trail could be deeded over to the town park to provide access to both developments. With that in mind, I get your idea of them not wanting people walking behind them, but it's important to note that lot 16 to lot 23 already have a park in their backyard.
Right.
There's going to be people walking back there anyways, right?
Yeah, so we're already taking that into consideration in our pro forma for the project, and that those lots are already going to be devalued, and now we're going to be devaluing another lot.
Let me just clear this up. You won't be devaluing that lot any further because that one also was already bordering on the park.
We'll be devaluing it because now we're introducing a trail that is promoting people to walk through that. Behind 16 and 17, currently it is just a wooded area. Yes, people can walk through there, but there is not a trail that can promote people walking.
I think it's a good idea, and there are ways to mitigate the downsides.
And it may never get used. And you don't know, but the idea is to try. I mean, if you're okay with the kids from the development that you're proposing going out on Rec Park Road to go to the park, that's fine. Okay, I'm just trying to find a way that we can provide safe access to the park. I'm not even sure that the park is okay with putting an entrance there. I haven't even proposed it to them. I've just been trying to put the pieces together so it could be possible.
It's something we'll consider. I know we are meeting with the town next week. That conversation is going to be trying to determine how much additional infrastructure and upgrades that this site can provide to the town. Certainly one of the things that has come up in the past is that we have a unique parcel, an asset having direct access from the main boulevard into the park. That's something that no other community in the area has. Providing that additional access certainly, I'd say, provides additional assets to other communities, which may hinder this community, and it may not make it as valuable and have enough revenue in order to be able to help the town and give them some of the elements that they're asking for with the additional infrastructure. So we'll consider it as something we'll bring up at our meeting with the town next week.
John, Mike Shaver again. Go ahead. Go ahead, John.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. You're all set. I'll wait.
This is the first time I've seen a development where they proposed using the cul-de-sacs and the inside of loop roads as stormwater management areas. Is that something that our engineers should look into? I've never seen this before.
So we did have a meeting with Paul Joseph last week. Certainly, the stormwater management area that's in the center of the cul-de-sac, we are going to remove, and we're looking at different alternatives for that right now. The other areas are simply shallow grass depressions. They are going to look as if they are mowed grass, and they will be usable most times of the year for residents of the community to go out. So there's going to be easement over the center of those islands and eyebrows that the HOA will maintain that area, and there'll be a whole harmless clauses set up with the town for the use of those areas. I've done this in a few other communities within Saratoga County, and it actually works out quite well.
So I guess that answers my next question. You're calling them eyebrows. The things that are listed as stormwater management that look like ditches, those aren't ditches, and those are actual micro pools for stormwater management. Is that the idea?
So if we're looking at this area here and this area here, that's...
No, I was talking about along the roads.
Over here.
Yes, and along the park road itself, along Huntings Boulevard.
Right, and that's something we are working with the town on right now. We're looking at alternative designs, possibly bringing that to the south side of the road and creating just a standard stormwater management area that everyone's accustomed to.
Okay, well, before you do that, are these two separate developments?
Yes.
Okay, so once again, we're talking about handling stormwater for one development on another person or another parcel.
Right.
Okay.
Is that legal?
And just to answer your question about the engineer review, John, like I said, we haven't started that yet. They haven't paid the fee for the review. As soon as that escrow account is set up, the review will be started.
Okay.
All right. Now, you said you had discussions with Paul, the highway?
Yes. And we were in Paul's office in the highway garage last Thursday, I believe it was.
And he's against stormwater management in the cul-de-sacs?
Just the one cul-de-sac. This one here, he doesn't believe it's enough space, and he wants to be able to do some snow maintenance in that area. So we are looking at other alternatives. Between Thursday and today, we've had time to do an updated map and revise that. But certainly in the following meeting in April, we're going to have that updated and revised to an appropriate solution.
I guess that's what my concern was, is it seems like all of your stormwater is right where all the snow would be plowed.
They stockpile snow in the middle of their cul-de-sacs.
And also forget it along the roads.
Yeah.
And I'm saying I don't like it. I think it's a nice use of those inner areas. It's just I'm wondering if this is going to be an issue if there's a heavy snow year and spring thaw.
Yeah, and certainly, that's something we can review with the engineer. I know, again, we talked with the highway superintendent. He didn't like the small cul-de-sac using that one, but the other two he was okay with.
Joe, Jones, has there been any progress on the water districts if you're not a district user or any resolution to that? Because it's conflicting information. The county apparently says you are, and our mapping says you are not in the district. So, any progress
to that? I can actually handle that.
Yep, go ahead, Carl.
I can actually handle that. So I did look into that. I was at the town hall for about 3 hours today trying to go through all this stuff. And the property is not within either Water District 4 or Water District 1. It borders on both. What you're looking at when you folks, the applicant says that it's, the county says it's in the district, what you're looking at are the assessment records. For some reason, the assessment record says you're in a district, but you're not technically in a district in the town. The map governs. So what you would have to do is just connect to either Water District 1 or Water District 4, and then you would have to be an out-of-district user. You can still connect to it because you're adjacent to both, so you can still get municipal water if we have the capacity. And I think that's something we can talk about when we have our meeting in the next couple of weeks. But just to make everybody clear, that's where things stand with the water district. The other thing I wanted to, Joe, and maybe I don't understand, you have said there is no HOA, and then you say there is an HOA for stormwater. Then you say there's not an HOA, and then there is an HOA. So is there or is there not an HOA for the stormwater? Who is going to take that away?
Just to clarify that, there is going to be an HOA that will be responsible for the maintenance of the stormwater management area that are located on town land. There is not going to be any HOA-owned lands.
Okay. All right. I think the board was a little confused. I thought I heard some of the board wondering about that, so I wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
Carl, I'm Mike Schaefer. You said they're not in the water district?
They are not in any water district. They are adjacent on either side. The park side is Water District 4.
Okay.
And Gander Road side, that is Water District 1, one of the extensions of Water District 1.
Okay, so they have to do a district extension?
They would have to do a district extension. No, they would have to do a district extension.
So they'd have to do a contract.
They have an out-of-district agreement.
So they could do a contract with the town?
They could, yep.
Okay. When the district.
That's something we're going to talk about because there may be capacity concerns that we have to look into. But that's something we're going to talk about, you know, when we meet with the next week or two.
Okay, thank you. What's his name, Joe? Joe, can we just go back to that compost pile for 1 second, please? Looking at it from a public safety issue, once we start taking that thing apart, the oxygen will get in there, and we could have some problems. So once you start taking apart, I know Freddie's there. I happen to know Freddie very well. He's an excellent contractor. Could he just notify the county that they're going to take that thing apart and maybe have fire come over and do some random inspections? But to talk to them before we get ourselves into a bind over there, there's a school, there's a school there, and there's quite a few residential homes. And I hate to see that thing get going and get a lot of smoke and create some things in the public. So I think just make a note for Freddie to do a simple phone call to the county and let them know what's going on up here. It's just a courtesy thing and a public safety thing. So if you could do that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, notifying the county or the fire district?
You can notify the county, and they could get a hold of the fire chief, and then the department could go from there. It's again, you know, with the school and everything being there, I hate to see we get a good smoky thing going there and get everybody into trouble. So.
I'll say we will agree to notify the appropriate entities at the time.
That would be great. Thank you.
This is John Arnold. Jen and Carla, the two of you can fight for ownership of this, but could somebody check with the town to see if the town would even be interested or willing to put an entry to the park there at that corner?
Yeah, I can do that.
I just realized I've been bugging both developers about this, and I don't even know if the park wants it. They may not want access in that corner. So I'm looking at the drawing right now. It looks like a wooded area with some baseball fields and things like that.
Yeah, this is Meredith. I was speaking in notes from the village, but off of Tamarack, which was Michael's group, off of Woodcrest, they have a connection to the bikeway and all that trail system. And
yep.
The village must own it. I'm looking at the map there. But it's just a gravel, crushed gravel path that cuts off Tamarack, goes into the bike system. My kids and I use it quite a bit. It looks like the neighbor has a fence. The house is listed at 433 on Zillow. So I think it's doing pretty well. So I think conversations with the town go forward, maybe we use that as, see how the village worked it out in that development.
Because, that lot 17 is way back to that back corner. It's well away from the house. It's a very large lot. So there's certainly, if the portion of it was used for a trail through there, it could be shielded, it could be fenced, whatever. It wouldn't be, too obstructive, but to the same degree, I hate to put a whole lot of pressure on the developers, either one of them, anymore, unless the town says, yeah, we wouldn't mind having an entrance there. It may not be anything anybody even wants at the park. I don't know. I'm trying to spitball ways to make sure that if these houses ended up with a bunch of kids in them, they aren't riding their bikes on Route 9 and 32 if we can help them. Or not Route 9, excuse me, 32 and Hoover Road, if we can help them. And if we can't, then we can't. Is what it is.
Mr. Martin, has this been sent to our engineers?
No.
Comment? Not yet?
No. We're still waiting for the escrow funds.
Okay. And I see a lot of concerns that I have. Maybe I'm an idiot. I don't know. But I see a proliferation of stormwater areas that are going to get filled. And they're going to get relocated if possible. I think we need comments from our engineering consultant before we can go any further with this. Because we've got a lot of work to do. If you look at my front yard, no plow, no plow.
Well,
thing is, we don't have an up-to-date stormwater plan from the applicants. I mean, this was just known last week that they're changing their approach. So I don't know where you're at with your redesign, Joe, but you know, we're going to need a revised SWIP and all that that reflects whatever the plan is for stormwater.
Yeah, we're certainly aware of that. Again, they're just between what, when we found out that this was an issue with the town at the meeting on Thursday and today, there was not time to do any of that work. Certainly, that'll be submitted for the next meeting, and certainly that's what we would ask the town engineer.
Do our engineers review this? Do our engineers review this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Just another question, quick. You have in the back of almost every lot here, I think it is every lot, a dashed oval-shaped feature. What is that?
So that is a shallow grass depression that would be managing any of the runoff that would come off the rear roofs of the houses. It basically just temporarily attenuates that stormwater and slows down the flow of stormwater heading off-site.
Okay. That's also part of the stormwater management.
Correct. That's part of the stormwater management. The thing we're doing here is to kind of eliminate...
Is that also HOA?
No, those are individual homeowner responsibilities.
So what I guess, is that going to be in the deed that those particular areas cannot be touched?
Yeah, there'll be restrictions associated with them, yes.
Because, I mean, they're not in the do-not-touch area of the lots that you've designated. They're inside the lot areas, and that dotted line that's the untouched area. That's why I was asking. So, basically, a good portion of the stormwater for this project is being managed by individual homeowners.
I would not say a good portion. It's a relatively minor portion. It's just the rear roofs of the houses. All of the front roofs and the driveways and the roads are all being managed in larger areas, larger areas.
If that is to the way it actually ends up, then that will, each one will be need to be annotated on the plans. The town cannot enforce a deed restriction or anything like that. The only thing the town can enforce and follow is if it's part of the approved subdivision mapping. So if you're going to do that, it has to be on here.
I'm not 100% following that comment, but we do have them shown, and we will be calling them out as a restricted area on the approved subdivision plans.
So, how do they actually function, Joe? They're a sloped depression in the yard?
It's a shallow grass depression, if you will, a 6-inch deep area that the roof runoff comes from. Roof hits the ground, runs across the ground, and is ultimately collected in these small depressions. And then it infiltrates into the ground.
So what if property owner number two comes along, he's mowing his grass one day and says, huh, I got this depression in my backyard I don't like, and he goes down to Lowe's and he gets 7 bags of topsoil and fills that in because he doesn't like walking down in that hole every time he mows his yard. What's going to happen then?
So he would be illegally filling that in a deed-restricted area, and it could be enforceable that he has to remove it.
Enforceable by whom? Not by the town.
I thought you were just saying that anything that's represented on the subdivision plan can be enforced by the town.
If you so annotate that on the plan, yes.
Boy.
Like
we're on enforcement now. How are you going to enforce something like that?
I guess from my standpoint, Joe, I would encourage if there's an alternative method that you investigate that.
Yeah, certainly we can look at it again. If we think about it logically, the water coming off the roof is probably never even going to make it to those depressions because it'll infiltrate through the ground. However, the way in which the manual reads and the way we have to design this to show it in our calculations, there needs to be some level of attenuation off the rear of those roofs. And the other option is opening up a swale that drains behind all the properties and collects and is discharged, which I think is more obtrusive than these all little depressions in each yard.
I think we refer it to engineers.
So what if you were to move those depressions into the area that's already annotated for not being touched?
No, the purpose of that open space area is to have that open space. The deed restrictions associated with that open space is no infrastructure, nothing that needs to be maintained. The object would be annual maintenance.
Okay.
Board, any further questions? Okay. We've heard in the beginning that the applicant has requested that we schedule a public hearing. That, of course, is up to the board. My take is it's no longer ready. There's too much work that needs to be answered, and information needs to be gathered before the point. But I am one member of seven. It's up to the board.
The other thing I would just suggest to staff is we have a relatively full public hearing slate. Given the content of the applications on April 19th already, we have two schedules, and it's going to be for Arrowhead and the PUD.
At this point, this hasn't even gone to our engineer.
That's correct.
And we're not sure that it's going to go. They're actually, if come off our surface this evening, changes have to be made before it even goes to our engineer. As far as what came out of talks with DPW and from this meeting this evening.
I agree. So turn it off, Spirit.
Thank you, Mr.
Applicant, do you have any further questions of us?
I think we do need to come back with the updated stormwater plan and get some engineering comments. I guess I would just ask that this certainly we can start the process if there is going to be a coordinated review. That we can start that process to help start expediting this.
That we certainly can do. Or, what is your pleasure? Type 1, type 2, unlisted.
Should we wait to see about the water districts? If they're going to even give them water? Because if they don't give them water, then it could be something totally different. I think we need to wait.
I guess we don't have...
Without municipal water, right? Without municipal water, this could change everything. They're not in the district. We don't know if they're going to be allowed in the district. We don't know if they're going to have that. Or they're not going to give them the water.
But as far as SEACR is concerned, is it type 1, type 2, or unlisted? Do I have a motion of some sort before the applicant pulls the suit? Take calls for a response.
Unless there's something I'm missing here, I'll make a motion that we ask you listed as lead agency on SEACR?
Yes.
This is an unlisted action.
Motion, thank you. Motion's been made to declare the Jacoby Farms North as an unlisted action as far as SEACR is concerned. To the motion, do I have a second?
This is Mary, I'll make a second.
Motion's been made and seconded to declare a unlisted action from Jacoby Farms North as far as Seeker is concerned. Any further discussion?
So you're taking lead agent status and declaring it? Yes.
Okay. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries? Warren, do you want to put yourself into the position of being the lead agency for this review?
Thank you.
You do. Well, we need to have a call for motion.
Sorry, I thought I did that with the last motion. So,
it's a motion for both declaring unlisted and to set the agency.
Yes, I did. That one's already gone through.
Okay. My error. I will shut my big mouth.
And I'm going to do the same six: DEC, DOH, DOT, school, county, and the AG.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything further, Board, that I can mess up? If not, turn about square play. Advocate, do you have any questions of us?
No, I think I'm all set on this application.
I do have one question in my head.
Yeah.
This is Johnny Small. Jim, can you bring a check to the town of Road tomorrow for $2,500? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. Make it payable to the town, and we'll establish the escrow account and get the review on the engineer started.
Okay. We do apologize. You know, this is the first time we heard it, so I will get that to the town tomorrow.
Very good.
And if I may, I'd just like to remind Jim, I'd like somebody to ask the town if they would even entertain the idea of having access to the park from that back corner.
I have it down in my notes.
Where this project comes in front of. Okay. Just because there's no sense, if they don't want it, there's no sense going any further, pushing any more on it, okay?
Yep.
So, all right.
Thank you. Next
Thank you for the meeting.
I have to apologize to you if I mispronounce the name. It's not intentional. Gaggiano or something like that?
Giacchino. Giacchino.
Okay.
Hold on, I got to catch up with you.
Hey, Jim, this is Joe Danville. Are you there?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, aren't we going to be discussing the other application, video application?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So you have the honor and privilege of hanging around till the end.
Wonderful. I'll try and stay awake.
That's a chore. We have one of the next ones.
Let me see here. Is Bill on? Bill Rourke? Bill, are you there? Bill?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can. Bill, you're a technological wizard.
I'm telling you, it's terrible.
Pen and paper works better.
Okay. Yes, we have the agent is on, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Tell us the story.
Okay, we're from the Robin Unitino subdivision. I believe it's the last lot they're going to develop. There's two other houses that have been approved. This is lot number two. They're slightly up. It's 42,000 square feet, just under an acre. They're proposing it has 155 feet of road frontage directly onto the road. It's being cut out of a 12-acre parcel. I don't believe, I shouldn't say this, but I don't believe they're going to be developing any more lots. I'm not sure of that. But this is just a one-lot subdivision.
And just as the board recalls, I think this was last on in maybe November, and there were some problems with the mapping that has since been corrected. But the reason why this is before you as a two-lot subdivision is they already did their one administrative two-lot, and now any other subdivision has to come before the board in a seven-year period, so that's why this is here. And I think this is a compliance situation now, as lot one does have 2 points of frontage, if you note, has 20 feet, and then 40.13 feet on Fort Edward Road, with one existing house on it, so that's lot one. And then this lot two would be a new compliant lot with a proposed residence on it. So that's why this is here, and it was looked at once, and we had to get some clarifications done on the mapping, and I think that now was in place, so this is back.
Yes.
Board, questions? What's your take, board?
I don't have a lot of questions, but that's pretty straightforward.
I think so.
It is.
Other than the seven-year, you know, the seven-year thing, this would have been administrative.
Right.
And it still does require a public hearing. We'd have to go through that.
This is Anna. So just a quick question. I guess the balance is lot one. It's access between the Tenticulo, I may not be pronouncing that incorrectly, lot and the lot of the dollars?
Yes. If you look closely, Anna, there's a 40.13 foot dimension there. Right under the name Raul.
To make sure.
And then, as a technical matter, it does have another area of frontage of 20 feet on Fort Edward Road.
See that, okay.
So it has two
points. So what is the plan for the balance of the land? I mean, right now you have none?
No, it has a house on it.
Yeah, but it's still a place that is acreage.
Well, there's a wetland on the back part of it, and if you notice the buffer line?
I see it.
It's pretty consumed by that.
I doubt if they're going to be developing that.
Okay.
But
now, does lot one also look down the north side of lot two? Is that what the baseline's indicating?
Let's hurry up here. Yeah, see, this is a lot. It goes like this. And then it goes down to here, and down like that, and right here. So they're taking this.
Chunk out.
Yep, this 155 feet of frontage for a lot, too. That was part of the problem. Prior to mapping, the lines were all.
More questions, comments, concerns?
I did notice it's in there on the seeker form, number 14, typical habitat types of urban and suburban. That's it, correct?
Yeah, Bill, we'll correct the, you should correct that item response to 14.
Yeah, probably. It's,
you certainly have wetland, so that's one item.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I said you certainly have wetland.
Yes, yes, I do.
And I think it's more appropriately termed suburban than urban.
Right. All right. And probably Forestman, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, that should be corrected.
Mr. Warren, what else do you want to know?
Hey, Bill, this is John Arnold.
Yeah.
You've been out on the site. It was questioned earlier whether one can be further subdivided. That area down in the south edge of it that's accessed by that 40-foot or whatever strip from whatever road.
Right.
Is that also wet there, or is there an area there enough that can be used for another lot? I won't hold you to it. I'm just curious. I don't have feet on the ground there.
So. I have no indication that they're going to develop anymore. I guess it could be.
Okay.
It's in the upland inclusion area.
Okay.
Well, it could be. I wouldn't suggest it.
Right. Okay. I was just curious.
They are not holding.
So going back to the lot number two that we're looking at subdividing, is there a reason why it's proposed to have that house that far from the road? Is there some type of a land?
Well, there's, see that dry ditch across the front of the property?
Right.
18-inch pipe in there. It's nicer in the back. And
okay.
All built in the back. I think it's a lot nicer.
Okay. So it's a choice. It isn't a requirement. Is it?
Correct. Okay. Right.
Or it can run.
Nope. So we're looking at a potential public hearing on this. This is if this doesn't fall under our normal subdivision site plan requirements, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because I'm noting that we don't have any terrain lines or anything like that on it. We have landmark designations and wetland designations, but we don't have topo lines or anything like that. But we don't need that for this smaller thing, right?
We typically do not for two lots.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Okay, Board. Put your seeker hat on. Type 1, type 2, unlisted. What's your pleasure? If we have an opinion, we can take it as a form of a motion.
I think the subdivision, this is the end, I think the subdivision action itself is maybe an unlisted. Type 2, I think, is the construction or expansion of a residence as opposed to the subdivision, but you know, Carl may have a different view.
No, we can do this one lesson.
Well, the whole thing is in here before us, so that's however many acres. They're looking at creating one, but this one lot is total area, unless it has been in here as a subdivision previously. And I don't believe this has.
Then we should probably change number 12 on our subdivision application, unless this is the last of a four-lot residential subdivision. I don't know if we can word that differently, because this is a two-lot subdivision, and it's in front of us, not the last of a four-lot residential subdivision.
It has to be considered, if two, what they're calling now two, is part of the total parcel, then we have a two-lot subdivision, yes.
Yeah. So that should be changed.
I'm sorry, what should we change, John?
On number 12 of the...
Seeker?
Subdivision application, number 12, it says the proposed development plan, briefly describe it, and it says last of a four-lot subdivision.
Sorry about that, I was looking at the seeker application, and that doesn't fit. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Now
we can go back to your type 1 definition again.
So what are we going to do?
Sorry.
That's okay. What are we going to declare this? What's your pleasure? Is it unlisted?
I'm going to be a new subdivision. No.
One second.
I don't see subdivision listed as a type 2, so I'm assuming it's an unlisted action. This is Ann.
Yeah. Is that in the form of a motion?
Sure. I can help. This should be listed as an unlisted action.
Thank you, Pearl. I make a motion that we determine this as an unlisted action.
Motion has been made to declare a two-lot subdivision, and again, I'll apologize to Gino.
Giacchino.
That's close. As an unlisted action to the motion, do I have a second?
I can second that.
Is that John?
Yes.
Yeah. Motion been made.
Yes, it was. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Motion been made and seconded to declare this as an unlisted action. All those announcements are controversial. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstentions? Do you like it? Motion been made and seconded. And I have no other discussion. And our vote for the debate is unanimous. What else would you like to do, Gordon?
We have everything we need to do a public hearing.
Well, that is a question that I would ask the board members. Do you feel that you have enough information?
I feel like we do.
I think we do, too.
Pretty straightforward, right?
So I will make a motion.
Meredith made a motion to set.
Meredith.
I'll second.
Mike seconds.
I'm going to make a public hearing for when?
April 19th, wasn't it?
We have three that night. But
oh.
Yeah, this should be too bad, though. I think we can do this.
Yeah, I think we can put this one in with those.
Motion been made. for a public hearing for April 19th, and I will go out on Wednesday, 7:15. To the motion, wait a second.
I'll second it.
Yeah. Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? And that, I don't think, is too controversial. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries.
Bill, are you still there?
Yes.
Don't forget to put your sign up 10 days prior.
This being a published action, we're still going for preliminary and final approval, correct?
You may be able to if you request that at the after the motion of the preliminary hearing. You may?
Yes, I'd like to do that and possibly the final also.
Yep.
The same.
You can do it. You can always make a request.
Okay.
What about square feet?
It depends on how much. What was that?
What I was going to say is that will depend on how controversial it turns out at the public hearing, right?
Right.
Right. Turnabout Sarah Flay, do you have any further questions of us?
Nothing. No, I'm all set.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Now, Mr. Merton, did I understand that there's been a request from Mr. Vittengill?
Yeah, it might be good to do that before you get into the solar law, so they don't have to hang around. Let me see if I can. Joe, are you still there?
He went to sleep.
Nope. Yep. I'm here.
Tell us the story.
Can I share my screen?
Where'd you go here? Let me get back to you. Hold on a second. There you go. Should be able to do it now.
Lot subdivision with an easement going through it for now.
So the access will still be off Route 9?
Hopefully.
Well, I mean, if it's only an easement, there's not a road there, then we can't have enough access without a road running, correct?
Right. Without the reservation board. And he's doing this. So, I just thought this was a change that was significant enough to bring it back to the board so you're aware and approve the amendment rather than doing it administratively.
This is Ann. How much acreage is on that other side of the easement, the property that used to be all of Lot 2?
So Lot 2 was 3.2 acres, and Lot 1 was 2.8 acres. I don't have the revised areas on here, but you're probably 300 by 200 is probably going to be more like 1.6 acres. So you probably have about 1.6 added to the 2.8. So you probably have like 4.4 as Lot 1 and about 1.6 in Lot 2.
Well, what portion of that Lot 1 is on the other side of the access road?
About 1.6 acres.
You're talking about the lot in the back that's being proposed at this moment, that could be there, that would be 1.6.
Right, but it's okay. Really a 4.4 acre lot.
That I understand that.
But I see where John's going with his thinking that in the event the road isn't built, that would be a compliant lot. It'd be a third lot.
Okay. Yeah, at the time the road gets built, there might be a further subdivision.
Right.
Is there any reason we don't call it a Lot 3 now?
Because it would be landlocked and a non-compliant lot.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I got you.
Okay.
But in the event this road is ever built, it's still a buildable lot because it has sufficient acreage.
And sufficient frontage on what would be a new public right of
way. With all due respect, that was your question, not mine. That was a good question. So this lot, too, that's being created, that if this other road isn't built, it will be accessing or having its access way onto Route 9 itself?
Correct. And it would be up to the user to get a DOT permit for that access.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. That would be understandable.
And just be aware, anything that occurs on Lot 1 is going to be in front of this board for site plan review and approval.
Right, of course.
And it'd be through that process likely that the access permit is dealt with.
Yep.
Anything that's done in Lot 2?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
How far does the existing drive go presently between the two lots?
I think we're pavement up to about this point here.
Okay.
Yeah, at site plan, even for Lot 2, if that was the first thing to come in, you'd want to start planning for the eventuality of that access road so the drive would come through that area where the access road is shown.
Right. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
How would that look? Would they have to get an easement from Lot 1 then to use that?
Yes.
Until the road is built?
Yes.
Okay.
Matt, you're going through the same thing right now with that BKM proposal there on Old Saratoga Road. In Route 9.
Of course, yeah.
It's the same type of thing.
Yep. Okay.
Board, any further questions?
I think a simple amendment or a simple resolution approving the amendment as shown would be.
What's your pleasure, Warren?
So that amendment would only change the lot line adjustment.
right?
Yes.
Basically, instead of the lot line following that easement, it would be split out to the new lot two.
Correct.
That wouldn't change any of the other contingencies or any of the other restrictions from the previous subdivision approval, all right, including the ones that say that we don't sign Mylars until that building's removed.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then if you want to put in your approving amendment, something to that effect, that would be fine.
I don't know if it's necessary, if it's already on the original site plan and it hasn't changed because of that. But
yep.
If you want to, it'd be kind of redundant, I think.
Yeah, okay.
So what's your pleasure, Board?
I have to make a motion to make a lot line adjustment from the previously approved site plan to the new lot 2 designated plan that we have in front of us here.
Okay. Motion has been made to approve the lot line adjustment, and I'm going to do a little bit of interceding here. Did we see this headed as Auto World or as Mr. Bittengill?
Auto World. It was referred to as Auto World's three lot subdivision, or two lot subdivision.
For a lot line adjustment to Auto World subdivision. So the motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Motion been made and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, would you call the roll, please?
Trisha's there.
I am here. I'm here.
I just want to make sure you're not here.
I can't see who that is, though, in the room. Is that Mr. Siebel?
That's correct.
And is he voting tonight?
I don't believe he is.
Okay. Thank you.
Is he here for Jerry?
Let's see.
Is he here replacing Jerry?
Ms. Perdue?
Yes.
Mr. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Bergman?
Yes.
Mr. Matias?
Yes.
Mr. Shaver?
Yes. He's replacing.
And Chairman?
He's replacing.
All right. I have 6 affirmative. Is that correct, Mr.
Chairman? Yeah, Adam does vote because Gary's not here.
Right.
That's right.
All right, Mr. Siebel?
Aye.
That was an aye. So,
got it.
Good thing I'm here, Jim.
Can't count. That's 6.
They've written out of fingers, right?
Motion carries.
6.
My shoes on.
I got 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6.
Good. That's our humor for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Board, for the consideration.
Good night, Joe.
Yep. Good night, Joe.
Great night.
Next item I have is a discussion on the draft solar law. Who wants to kick it off?
Carla, did you want to do anything to introduce this, or?
I can if you want me to.
Sure.
You've looked at this more recently than I have, so.
I've looked at this way too much over the past.
Good job, Carla.
What you have before you is the draft civil law that was worked on quite extensively by the town board over a number of meetings and workshops. They went through line by line, working with the model law. They had some pretty intense discussions. What you have before you is what they wanted to send to the two boards and to NYSERDA to review, to get further comments, and then have a fully vetted draft to go out to the public to hear the public's concerns. We know the public is very interested in this, and we don't want to diminish the public's input, but we wanted to be able to have a cohesive document to present to the public. So the document you have in front of you has been vetted through the zoning board last week or 2 weeks ago. I cannot remember when it is. And they have some suggestions. I attended a meeting with NYSERDA and a couple of the town board members a few weeks ago, where NYSERDA and their clean energy siting team went through with us for over an hour and a half and gave us some suggestions, gave us some thoughts. Obviously, they're just helping us out here. They are in the process of working with Pace University Law School to revamp the model law. So this actually was very fortuitous in that the town of Monroe's law is being looked at with NYSERDA. Obviously, NYSERDA cannot tell the town what to do. It's the town board's role in enacting the law. But NYSERDA has been good to work with, and their clean energy siting team in particular. So you folks are, I don't want to say the last line of defense at this point, but you're the last folks I'm waiting to hear from with respect to this law. I know that I have received some comments, and I've had some back and forth with a few members of the board. So I guess, I don't know, Jim, I don't know how you ran this with the zoning board last week. I was unable to attend that meeting. So perhaps you can go through it the same way you did it with the zoning board, if that seems to work for you.
Well, what we did is we, and it's up to the board, obviously, it's your meeting, but that evening we went through just member by member and got their individual comments. I took some notes, and then they also had the option of, if they wanted to send along an email with their individual thoughts, that's certainly permissible, and I just forwarded it on to the town board. I think you all saw that. So Gary Endel did take advantage of that. He had his individual markup that he provided, and then I did the summary points from the members based upon my notes from what they said, and I also provided them the opportunity to supplement that further if they wanted to, and I haven't heard anything yet. But so I that seemed to work, but it's up to you guys, however you want to do it. But we went through person by person.
I know. My biggest question, and I don't mind starting this, if that's okay with anybody. And it's, I guess, Carla, is there anything in this? I did not see anything. I could have not read it. But disposal of these solar panels. Is there anything that we can say they cannot be disposed of in the town of Morrell? I go back to the GE site where things got buried, didn't know about it, and that kind of stuff. And not knowing anything what's inside these solar panels is, in 20 years from now, they need to go someplace. If they get broke on site, what is the cleanup detail that could protect the town on this?
I think the way that would work is through the decommissioning plan. You would have to, they would have to do the decommissioning plan and explain how they would remove all of their documents, all of their panels, and that is something the town could require, that they cannot dispose of the town. But that has not come up yet. So
okay.
I'm taking notes and I'll see if we can incorporate that in.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Carla.
Yes.
Well, Jim, I did have an exchange with Carla over a couple of things, but I'm going to want to make sure we put them into our minutes here, so I'll go through them again anyways. One of them is under the definition of a ground-mounted solar array. The very last phrase in that definition is for on-site use.
Yeah, that's going to be changed, that's
okay. Yeah, all right, so I wanted to make sure. Okay, all right, because really ground mount is about the type of structure, not necessarily its generated use. Another thing is I think in the law it mentions 40% coverage. The panels at Tier 3 in the R5 can't be more than 40% of the site coverage. What I'd like to know is, I honestly consider that to be a pretty large percentage. Myself personally, if this is really about, trying to allow access but not have it be the primary use in the ag zone or in the R5, but I wonder how you would enforce that. I mean, like, if somebody owns 100 acres and they want to put 40%, which would be 40 of those acres, is there some kind of restriction on the other 60 of what can be done with it?
Well, I think that's going to be addressed with the application process, because the other thing I understood, Carla, that's 40% of the land after prime farmland is deducted, correct?
Well, that's what's being... Right now, the law says that prime farmland cannot be used.
So you deduct that first.
I don't know as if that's going to remain, but that's what is being proposed.
And if I may, since that's been brought up, I would like to say that I like the designation or the way that it was listed in the law for protecting that land. I know there's been comments from other people on the zoning board and on the town board that it appears sometimes that their biggest concern is whether people are going to be able to see this from their back window. As a farmer in the town of Moreau, I can tell you right now that there isn't an acre of farmland in the town of Moreau that isn't valuable. That isn't, if it's good farmland, if it's prime farmland, historically good farmland, there is a market for it and there is a use for it right now. So anything we can do to make sure that if these solar panels get put in, they don't get planted on the best farmland in the town, it's a smart move.
What is the definition of prime land?
Well, I was going to clarify that. My understanding is that there is a standard that is met to qualify as prime farmland, and
yes,
that is a mappable standard. So in other words, if somebody's
actually,
got... Go ahead.
It's actually in a map already.
That's what I mean.
You can get that information from the county.
So if somebody's got 100 acres and they have 50 of it's prime farmland, then that gets mapped and that area is not to have a solar panel on it. So that person is automatically dealing with then 40% of 50 acres.
And that's mapped in the county right now?
On the state. The state has that as in their clearinghouse of mapping. That digital mapping,
uh-huh.
There's a layer that is prime farmland.
Okay.
But it's important to note that not all of the prime farmland is mapped, but it can be. Okay.
So should it be?
Well, it can be as you go along. I mean, I'm going to say this,
okay.
That probably all of the active farmland that's prime farmland is already mapped.
Well, John, again, the answer to the original question, how's this going to work? Is if somebody applies to have a solar array on their farm, it's going to come in for site plan review like anything else, and that's going to be a standard to meet. In the application process, do you have prime farmland? Regardless whether it's from the state mapping that's available, or if that person hasn't done that, they're going to need to quantify that in order to answer that question. And then once that's mapped,
right.
Once that's mapped, then you're going to work outside of that area.
The wording that I saw listed prime farmland, and also Scott said farmland of historic significance or whatever. I mean,
right.
It did a very nice job of including everything, so I was good with that. But my question to you then, Jim, is, okay, let's say there's our 100-acre farm, 50 of it's prime farmland, we have another 50, we cover 40% with panels, that's 20 acres, okay? Is that other 30 acres now designated as undevelopable because of that, or?
No.
I guess.
Just for the purposes of locating a solar array on that site, it would be limited to that 20 acres.
Okay, all right, I wanted to make sure of that. All right, so if somebody wanted to do that and then take the other 30 acres and put houses on it, they could.
Correct.
Or an
allowed use.
Do they have to be so far away from the residential area, though?
Well, you would have to, in the law itself, just like with any other application that comes before you, there's going to be setback requirements, there's going to be visual requirements. All of that is in there, and that's why you folks, you know, this is going to be on you. You guys are going to be the ones that do the hard work, and when the applicant comes to you, they're going to have to meet it. You're going to have to go through this. And so that's why if you think there's something that you want to see in this law that's not there, let us know, because you're the ones that are making the sausage.
Well, if we put a residential area in, I wouldn't want them real close to a residential area, right? Is there, again, we don't know, do these put off anything? You know, like if you live too close to an electrical line, they say it's not good for you. I'm not an expert on this. Is this something that we don't know what these things put out? And is there future harm down the road to a residential area or too close to a school? Or
I have not heard of any health issues being or deriving from proximity to a solar array. I have not heard of it.
Is there any place we could go to get that answer?
I would think my server would know that.
Yep. They did not bring that up. This is where I've been in, where the telecommunications and energy is. No, usually that argument doesn't hold anything. Your home microwave puts out a lot more than anything.
Right. So, and you know, the other thing I would like to bring up is we keep, like I said, it was from what I read in the paper and read from the minutes of the meetings, there was always a concern of these things being visible, and Mike just said the same thing. Maybe we want to make sure these can't be sited too close to a housing development, and I almost have to say, we're going to call all these things community solar arrays. I almost wonder that they shouldn't be set near housing developments where they can help offset the electrical use instead of, if we seem to want to just throw it out into the farm area, you know, where there's open space and we can just leave it out there and it won't affect a lot of people. I realize that these things generate, they hook up to the electrical grid and they can go anywhere. So I'm not saying that I think it has to be directly connected to a house.
Clarify a couple things. First of all, the reason why the ag land in Morrell is coming under such interest from these providers is it just so happens that our ag land has a couple prime transmission lines running through it. And one of the things that's a primary consideration for commercial solar is proximity to the transmission line. If you're too far away, it doesn't become feasible. So that's what's really putting the pressure on some of the farms. Like, for example, what you just saw in the PUD request from American Light and Energy, the reason why they're so interested in that particular site, it has a transmission line running right through the middle of it. It's prime for that.
But if I understood it correctly, he wasn't planning on connecting to that transmission line.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's connecting to... I thought he was connecting to the three phase out on 197.
So no, this is all I do, maybe hold a little bit of my national grid hat on. Partially, yes. Because the developer has to pay to connect. So that's on them. So if they want to go somewhere far, far away, they're going to pay a lot of money to hook into the grid. 115s and higher are regulated by the New York State ISO. So, no, they're not going to tap into a 115, but knowing that they can tap into a substation that then can draw the power to a higher transmission line is usually the draw. So that is why Grow with multiple transmission lines in it, but it's more the proximity to distribution.
And then the other thing, Meredith, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's also not correct that this gets put in, the power gets put into the user on site or... It's part of the local town electricity. It's not. It goes into the grid as an offset.
Yeah, that's more of what I'm not involved in. It does go into the collective grid.
You don't have a solar array in Moreau and the Moreau electric bills then go down because we have a solar array here. That's not how that works.
Yeah.
It just goes into the grid as an offset. And you still get your power from the grid.
There are those deals out there, too, that you see in the mail, Nexam, where you can start buying your power from a solar provider.
Yeah, but still, it's still a pass-through. It's not, and that's the other misnomer about when you get this individually at your house. You can't, it's a very expensive procedure to have the electricity you generate from your solar panel on your roof to be used in your house. You have to have batteries set up and all that. It's put back into the grid, and you get the offset benefit in your bill.
Jim, that's not necessarily what I understand, okay?
Well, that's what I've been told.
Well, I,
their electricity does go to the grid, but they have a back feedback or whatever meter that basically judges how much electricity they're putting to the grid, and that comes off of their bill. I mean, they may not be using the electricity directly from the panels, but it is a direct offset to their...
That's what I just said.
But I don't know if that would work with a subdivision. I'm just saying for like a large user, for an industrial user, for a commercial building on our Route 9 corridor with panels on the roof, I'm pretty sure they can use the net metering for that, but I'm not positive. So, but these, I mean, that's not what's being proposed at Fox Run. That's 2.5 megs at Fox Run. That's an electric generating facility. That's a different animal.
I guess I have a question for Carla.
Okay.
If we go forward with this and we have a situation where open farmland and the developer is putting these panels in, and because I'm still putting things, selling it back to the grid, that then becomes a commercial operation in agricultural lands. Is that even legal?
Well, by this law, it would be. Because this makes it, this is allowed to be used on the property. Because it's seen not as a commercial use, but more as a public utility.
So should we leave it that way? Or should we keep our farmlands farmland and not have a commercial? Even though it's a utility, somebody may get the use out of it. But I don't like to see farmland gobbled up.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. These are all great ideas. I'm not here to defend
We realize that.
Yes, to answer any questions. These are all good points.
Carl, how about the... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, the only thing is that somebody mentioned it's seen as a public utility. Usually the public utility designation goes to transmission lines, gas lines, railroad tracks, public roads, that kind of thing. It doesn't necessarily go to an electrical generating facility, does it?
It does in the town of Moreau. That's how the town has looked at allowing them, and the only way the town has allowed them is the industrial park.
Okay.
Yeah, given how our ordinance is currently set up, there's a term in the M-zone power transmission plant or something like that, power plant, and these are viewed as power plants, and that's where they're that's why they're allowed there in the M-zone.
Right, but that makes sense. But I mean, as far as
electric power plant,
we're now saying is we're going to allow manufacturing in the ag zone.
Right.
In
the good question.
That's why I'm sitting here listening to you folks. This is what right now. The answer is no. Right now, as the law that's before you says, you cannot. If it's prime farmland, you cannot have solar. Now, if you have non-prime farmland.
That's why the definition is important.
One of the things I want to approach with you folks, too, is there has been a concept that Jim and I have discussed known as an overlay district. And that's something that the town board, as of now, did not want to put on the draft. But I wanted everyone to be aware of, in lieu of saying you cannot have them in a certain district, the town then creates overlay districts, and the overlay district is a little more flexible. But that's something that's not before you, but it is a concept that has been brought up, and has been brought up by NYSERDA as well. So, bring that to your attention.
And the reason why I like that is an overlay district, these are not then allowed as of right. An overlay district has to apply each and every time, and it has to go through the town board to establish the district, and then it has to come to this board
for the site plan review to approve it. Or at least that's how I would recommend the procedure be established. So it's that extra layer of review each and every time a decision about, you know, a major power generating facility is decided upon. And it's not allowed as...
So it's like a PUD then?
Correct. A PUD is essentially a floating district.
So it can be, or the town can say the overlay district is, and they can draw a circle and say this is what the overlay district is, and then it would automatically always go to the town board. This is, I mean, none of that's in the law you're looking at, but I wanted you to be aware of that.
Carlo, was there any talk about, you keep talking about prime farmland, about the non-prime land in the town that could be suitable for these? I'm looking at the brownfield site, the landfill, the superflex sites, and that's very common. You've seen some of these developments go there. There's a lot of other neighbors outside of town purview, but sometimes that's suitable. You have this land that can't be used that are needed. So the dump on Weibel Avenue is one in Saratoga.
Yes.
Right. The way the town board reviewed it was district by district. So they decided in the draft to identify which districts solar would be allowed in, and tier three solar would be allowed in. But again, that's one of the reasons that Jim and I were just talking about the overlay, because that could encompass, there is areas in the town that have that capacity and the potential.
Yeah.
And the acreage for these things. So that is something that,
is
out there.
They are right next to KB's. And then also, you wouldn't want to put a situation where, like, GE wants to come 10 years from now and do something with Pluto, and they have to get use variance. And that's nearly possible. So I wouldn't want to get a situation where I get the zoning district application, but also at the same time, there are places that this is suitable in the town throughout
because of its history. This is Dan. I have the same kind of concerns that Meredith has. One thing I think is lacking in both the draft legislation and in the comprehensive plans is that there's no real expression about when and where, particularly the commercial operations of a solar plant, would be desirable. And prioritizing siting on productive or previously disturbed land like a landfill, and also emphasizing the need to minimize the impact on agriculture in our area would be concepts that really need to be, I think, emphasized. And again, comprehensive plan probably has to be amended in order to provide that guidance on both. I don't think the plan was done, anyone contemplated solar power, or at least it wasn't mentioned.
What I will say in the comprehensive plan and the farmland protection plan for the town, that farmland is considered a priority. All right, and protecting that farmland was considered a priority. Now, there is a lot of land in our archive zone that is not valuable, historically valuable, or prime farmland. So it's not to say that there's no place in the RFI for these solar generating facilities. Every time I talk to one of the solar developers or one of the people in the town that are thinking about putting it in, they all argue that the best place for them to put it is on that flat, low-grain farmland area. That makes me really uncomfortable. And it is mentioned over and over again that these aren't permanent use, they're temporary. And to some degree, they are. But most of them have 25-year contracts with at least 3 5-year extensions. We're talking 40 years. I don't plan on being here 40 years from now. It's a couple of generations. So it's certainly, in as much as it may not be a permanent use, it is not what I would consider a temporary use either.
Mm-hmm. I think once you take agricultural property out of agricultural use, the likelihood of it returning is probably quite small historically. Now, I had a couple other comments. I gave Carla a load of them, many of them, drafting clarifications and such, but I had a couple that were maybe kind of overarching.
overarching. It really has to do with the role of the planning board in the review of these projects. Particularly, well, actually, Tier 1, we're not involved. That's a building permit process. We are involved in the Tier 2 and 3. And I presume that in Tier 2 we're going to, and 3, we use the same site plan review process that we have currently in the code. Is that correct, Carla?
That is correct. Just so you know, one of the things that has been raised by NYSERDA is that perhaps you guys only look at the Tier 3 and not the Tier 2, but that hasn't, that's just one of their comments. Because the Tier 3 could be more administrative.
Yeah, well, both of them are, at least in the current draft, are set up such that it seems like the only only review that the planning board conducts is perhaps seeker and maybe some screening. Otherwise, it looks like all aspects, all requirements of those types of projects are set out.
For Tier 3?
Yeah. It's pretty, well, pretty lengthy list of, you know, if all these things are provided, it's almost like we have a checklist, and go check that's been provided, check decommissioning plan, you know, and so on.
Well, if you look at Section C, at 149-99C, you do have site plan review standards.
So, but site plan review would be determining the setbacks and such are met?
That's what it has in there. That's all adhered to height and setback requirements of the underlying zoning district.
Right, so anybody can figure that out. But what if we sense that, oh gee, this is just the wrong place? It may be inappropriate for a district where it's permitted, and maybe that it can meet these setback requirements, but it's really horrible. It's not a
well, good. just like with every application, and not like the placement of it, you need to have an actual, as you know, legal basis to deny it if it meets what's in here. Just because the board is not comfortable, you know, where it's located, if it meets the requirements, then it should go forward. But I mean, to your point, that's exactly why we're talking to you. These are things that the town board would not have thought of because they don't do what we post.
Again, the way I read this is that you go down the list, we determine the height, setback, light, lot size, and so on, which are fairly easy to calculate. Are done, and then we're left with screening, maybe, you know, what kind of berms. Not as desirable.
And roads.
Visual impact is there.
Visual impact.
Yep.
Visual impact is going to be the big.
Yep.
Yeah.
My curiosity.
So I think, too, then maybe it gets back to the concern about how the comprehensive plan is written, and where these types of projects are considered desirable. The manufacturing industrial makes sense, but then we have R5 or Tier 3.
Yeah, I'm going to speak up. You know, as you guys know, I work for one of the companies proposing one of the sites, so you know, you can take that as a lies. The argument against solar and manufacturing and industrial is that it doesn't create the jobs that are desired by the M1 or, you know, those commercial districts. It's so usually it gets a sideways look there because it doesn't fit the definition that you look at industrial or commercial, but it doesn't fit the economic reasoning for those districts. You know, and that was one of the points made. There was a solar development that was presented maybe 2 or 3 years ago for the industrial park out Bloomberg, and that was one of the considerations that you're using up acreage, you know, in something that's zoned for, you know, perhaps more job intensive use. You know, just speaking of that one, it's tricky because, you know, for the sites that would be presented under Tier 3, they are very limited, as Mary said. to transmission lines. And, you know, this is where perhaps, as Carl mentioned, the overlay district may be messed up. Because it's not going to run rampant because the infrastructure is not there. You know, it's all about transmissions. And I'm not, you know, I don't work on this stuff. I know about it because my company's doing it. I'm on the river, so I'm sure I'll look at it. But it's, it is constrained by the infrastructure that's in place. And no one's going to change that. You can't build new transmission. It's not really.
Hey, Carla? You know what might be a reasonable request to make, particularly with our supervisor's newfound power at the county, is to request a GIS exercise be done and map all the sites in Moreau on a predetermined basis that meet the qualification standard for proximity to a substation or a transmission line. And you're going to know right up front, to the acre, what envelope, what building envelope you're dealing with in the town.
And
where it's located.
And I can do that. I can ask if we can do that.
If you can do that, and then have layers for the for the pond soil classifications. And then, and then while we're at it, take a look to your steep slopes, areas that are not buildable for anything.
I can ask them to do that.
That's not a hard exercise. It's not a hard exercise. But within a couple of days, they could get there, and you can get down to the acres what the net result is, where it's located, and what lots are involved.
Can I ask you a question, please, just for clarification? We keep talking about transmission lines. And I think somebody told me earlier that phase three isn't what they're tying into. What transmission lines are these particular facilities looking for?
If it's utility scale, then you're looking probably at, let's say utility scale in the megawatt size, you're usually looking at, 34.5 or 115 kV.
Okay. So it's high voltage, that's not three phase.
Well, it is three phase, but three phase high voltage. It's not just two voltages.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is it seems to be listed as some kind of a limitation, but the dozens of people that have told MIDR trying to get 40 acres of my land for solar panels have said that they can hook right up to the power lines on Fordsville Road. That's why they're in MIDR. Now, that means it's a county highway, and that's a pretty standard power feed. That's not a, it's going to be hard to find those lines kind of situation. So, I would agree. It would be kind of nice to know where they're looking at and what's, the potential build-out for something like this.
Right.
I will do that. I'll see what I can do.
I have one further question for Carl. Clarification, actually. Under our site plan review standards, they're listing a particular lot coverage. Are we, in this instance, referring to solar panels only, or solar panels plus other infrastructure that would be considered as part of lot coverage?
My understanding is it's the panels.
Just the panels.
That's my understanding.
I think that's correct.
And perhaps we should clarify that, make a panel of lot coverage or whatever, for some clown like me. So we've got these buildings over here, so you got to deduct that.
Okay.
Carl, can you explain a little bit about how the pilot agreements would work, particularly in agricultural districts? I do understand that if this law is adopted, that the town would have the option of entering into a pilot agreement that would reduce
or the arrays are actually the person's property. And so that's
So I guess if
you can explain this how that works.
Sure. Absolutely. This is an ever-changing area of the law, and in the last few months there was a case that came down talking about this. But the way the current real property tax law is written is the towns have the option. The way the town and road code is going to be written is it's not an option, that the town is requiring them to get the pilot, to enter into a pilot agreement. So the way the courts have held that, especially in agricultural land, the land itself, for example, if I own the land and I get an ag exemption, but then, and you come in and you own and you put on, this is like you're a different company and you come in and you put on the panels. The ag exemption is reduced on the amount of area that the panels would be, and then those panels would be taxable, so to speak. So the way folks are dealing with that now is to just say, we are going to require a pilot agreement, and the folks that own the solar panels have to pay the taxes, you know, the payment in lieu of taxes for them to be in the area. That being said, there is a proposed or recommended calculation that NYSERDA puts out that says how much each taxing jurisdiction can get from, for example, National Grid. If it's national, you know, they're going into National Grid. Generally speaking, in this area with the National Grid, it's about, I want to say, $3,500 or $5,000 per megawatt, I believe.
I think in Glenville, we just passed this provision in our law. We got $7,500.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead of me there, Jim. but what I'm saying is there's a recommended calculation. And to your point, you put this in one of your response, one of your comments to me. That's all of the taxing jurisdictions combined. But the county. Town, school district. All three are going to require a pilot in the town tomorrow. All three would be capped at a certain amount if we went with NYSERDA's calculation. But as Jim indicated, we're not required to. So it's really a discussion that the town board is going to have to identify the amount that they're going to require. So
the town has an option to require a full assessment, doesn't it?
Well, because it's a pilot, we have the option, we're not going to do the full set. We're going to put down whatever the town board wants. They haven't discussed it. They just wanted, and working with the assessment office, they wanted this implemented into the law right now.
But it would be this, but they're contemplating then something less than full assessment.
They may or may not be. They haven't discussed the number yet.
Okay.
The other thing
they don't have. If they don't have a pilot, it would be full assessment.
Well, no, because they're exempt. The land would be exempt. So the ag exemption, you know, would be there on the land. And then the area on the land that the panels are on, the courts are back and forth on whether or not they are exempt.
The ag exemption is only for active farmland.
Understood. But we're presuming that the rest of the farmland is actually being actively farmed.
Okay, but where the solar panels are is not actively farmed.
Right, so that would not be part of the. Okay. That's why I'm saying the ag exemption will be reduced.
Okay, alright.
But that.
I just want to make sure I understood you.
The array is going to be taxed as a solar power operation.
Correct.
And if we would enter into a pilot agreement, but right. I thought the pilot agreement was something you could provide or not provide for in the legislation.
It is in the state legislation. However, towns are given the option to incorporate in their town code and their home rule that we are requiring.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why. Well, because it benefits the town to do that, because there is, you know, each year the folks are going to bring Article 7 cases claiming that they should be exempt, claiming that because the law is all over the place, they're going to say, no, we should be exempt, therefore, or we should not be assessed as high, and we have to go through litigation for all of that. So one of the things that many assessors across the state are doing is requiring pilots, because that gives some certainty to not only the town, but it gives certainty to the solar companies as well. They know how much they're going to have to pay over the next term of the pilot.
So the pilot then takes into consideration the change of use of the land.
Correct.
So it's no longer designated as active farmland ag exemption.
That area is not. A pilot is in lieu of tax. So this is like a separate agreement we would have with them. They would have
what I'm asking is that land still farmland even though you're getting a pilot payment for the use, or is it changing the designation of the ag exemption completely as far as where the panels are?
That's a question for the assessor, how she clarifies, how she quantifies that.
Okay, all right.
Would the pilot apply to Tier 2 as well? Tier 3 only.
Okay. So if a farmer puts a Tier 2 system up to provide 110% of the farmer's requirements, then their tax exemption is not going to be affected.
Correct. Right? As it's right now, it's Tier 3 only. And that's how it is in those areas.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense, because if they're putting up a solar array for their own agricultural purposes, that's probably considered an agricultural use.
It is.
It's covered by ag markets.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing with if I wanted to put a solar or a windmill here at the farm, as long as the windmill doesn't generate more than 110% of my use, it's really all covered under ag markets. Height limitations and everything else, the windmill is considered an ag structure because it's producing electricity for the ag production. So the same would go with the solar panels, I would assume.
Correct.
Under the abandonment and decommissioning, who reports out whether or not they are functioning properly or generating electricity?
That's actually something that was brought up by NYSERDA as well, so that's something that we have to look at as to how it would be, you know, how the decommissioning plan would have to change, because you don't want the town to go down and do, how the town would go and enforce that. So that's something that does need to be discussed. I don't have an answer for you. That's something that needs to be discussed.
Okay.
On the 4,000 square foot coverage limitation for the solar panels in Tier 2. I was wondering where that came from. It didn't seem to relate to anything.
Honestly, I did not know. Like I said, this went over. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
I mean, basically, the 4,000 square feet comes from the definition of a Tier 2 system, which establishes a cap of the 4,000 square feet of the solar panel surface area, not lot coverage. So it's a little different there. And that's something that I was working with NYSERDA on. So the 4,000 square feet is really the solar panel surface, the area of the solar panels, the surface, not the lot coverage.
And a question regarding building integrated systems.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that they would just be general building permit material, not even considered a Tier 1.
Under the model law, they're considered Tier 1. So that's why they were incorporated in the town law. But I mean, I'm taking all the points down. So
okay. No, that's a question.
Tier 1 is considered on-site use, though, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I guess I had the same question about the 4,000 square foot, because if a facility in a zone that allows for a Tier 1 setup can use more than 4,000 square feet of solar panels on-site, why would we limit that?
The 4,000 is in Tier 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of panels. It's almost 230 panels. And a typical house would use 14 to 36.
Board, any further questions for Carl? Or comments?
Again, if people have individual comments, you can email to me and I'll make sure we pass them around to both the town board and the zoning board.
Is Carl going to distribute our notes from the minutes, or should we still follow up?
I have handwritten notes, and I think I can read them. And I think Jim was probably taking notes as well.
Yeah, I was taking some.
So we can all, I will put together a summary of everything that I put down. I think Jim will do the same. He did that with the ZBA. I don't want to tell Jim what to do.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'll do the same here. And again, if I didn't capture your comment correctly or was too short, certainly embellish or provide further detail, and I'll make sure that gets passed around to everybody.
So everybody knows kind of, I know there are some attendees on that have particular interest in these. The next step really would be kind of putting all of these together and compiling everything and going back to the town board and saying, okay, these are all the comments that we've received from NYSERDA and the planning and the zoning board. Let's hash this out. Let's get a working draft, and then we can go out to the public. And with any luck, when we do that, we'll actually maybe we'll be able to see some members of the public in lieu of having a full Zoom meeting. But at this point, that's kind of where we are. I don't want to say that we are definitely doing that, or that there's any kind of public hearing or anything scheduled as of yet. So I just want everybody to be aware, especially the attendees online, that at this point, we will compile everyone's comments and bring it back to the town board, and then the town board can look at that and decide what they want to do.
Very good, Carl. Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Warren, anything further? I have one item before we go. And we have coming up, as you may well be aware, a public hearing for a solar farm. In our deliberations, we have concentrated on whether we feel that this application meets the requirements of PUD. I would urge everyone before the next meeting to think about what other things should we be considering in this PUD application. Don't have tunnel vision for is it legal or not, because the legality of it really is not up to us. So think of everything you may want to question as we go into our deliberations.
What is that next? The 15th, right?
That was on to April 19th for a public hearing.
Yep. So that's going to be a lengthy public hearing.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't schedule anything else that night because we got three.
Well, that's up to you guys.
Should talk about that now because we're getting back
you
into where.
You have three other public hearings scheduled for April 19th.
That's what I'm saying. So
we're getting a couple tonight.
Yeah, but one of them's not very controversial. That'll be crickets in the background kind of thing. So,
two of them could attract a lot of attention. Arrowhead could attract a lot of attention, and I think certainly the PUD request will as well.
Yes.
So my question is, do we schedule anything else for that night, or do we go back to having the two meetings again?
Well, you schedule a public hearing. We can't change that.
Correct.
Well,
to entertain anything else.
Well, actually, like for example, next week's not too bad. I think there's, if memory serves, I think there's two items on the agenda. Next week's is not, the regular March meeting is not bad, but April's already got at least three items.
So I guess my question is, do we schedule more for April? While we're here now, can we say that's enough?
I guess the question really, come on, I'm going to jump on you, man, like we might lose her. Is it appropriate or allowed for us to limit, during public hearing, individuals' comments to a certain amount of time?
Yes.
The organizational meeting limits comments in public hearing to 5 minutes per individual.
That's incredibly reasonable.
And I think you also have an opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to hold off on second-time commenters until everybody's heard at least once.
And how many times can they comment? Is it just twice?
Or once until we get through.
As many times as you want them to.
As many times as they want to.
As many times as you want them to, but there are ways that public hearings are held, and especially in the Zoom era, so to speak, there are ways that I can work with you to make sure we have this all set so that everyone can speak, but everyone is not repeating everyone else's comments.
Okay. And we also say that it has to be application-based, just so somebody doesn't want to get up and talk about climate change and renewable broader picture.
So what I'm saying is, Jim, is there anything else coming in for the April 19th meeting?
There's another PUD lurking out there in the shadows, but it won't make it to this board until May at the earliest, I would suspect.
Okay. So that we're now here at 11 o'clock at night, I think.
And I don't know if anything else.
Too lengthy, you know?
There's going to be some, I think, substantial reconstructions on a couple of properties on Route 9, you know, I think that are probably a result of the sewer. So.
Yeah.
But we have permission to hold two meetings a month if necessary.
We have to go.
So, Mike, would you like Jim to contact us if something else comes up to see if we would like to split it into two meetings?
You know, John, I do. I think that's important because I find myself here much after 10 o'clock at night, not, you know, after working all day and everything, being here until the 11 o'clock hour. I think that's unreasonable to be doing, conducting business. I just...
Well, that's what we did that resulted in this meeting. You know, we had eight applications come in, and some of them, by the nature of the applicant, was complex and, you know, lengthy. So we tried to balance the two meetings out, and I think it worked out pretty well. I mean, I know it's late.
I think it worked out great, yeah.
It's they were about the same amount of substance with each meeting.
Yep, and I don't know that. Yeah. Yes, I would, John, I think.
I'm going to say.
I think that's a great idea.
I'm going to say, Mike, if that's what you're asking, Mike, then I'm going to agree with you that Jim should get a hold of us if there's more stuff that shows up and see how we feel about it if you want to split it into two meetings.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. I'll keep an eye on it and notify you accordingly.
Perfect. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, John.
Mr. Martin, do you have anything for us?
Nope, I'm all set.
All set. If that's the case, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Mike.
Yes, sir.
Motion made and second. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor, aye.
Good night.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions?
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. So, Jim, are we off?
Hold on.
I just want to know how much weight you lost.
knocks on the door tonight, guys?
Not tonight.
The tonight.
They're scared now, John. They're scared.
All right, hey, you guys take care.
You too, John. Take care. We get good night. I got 17 off since the first of the year.
But I've lost about...
Oh. I noticed it tonight.